If you're a physician who wants more autonomy in how you practice or fulfillment in your life, you're in the right place. This is the Change Physician Podcast, where our guests reveal how you can learn the mindsets, skills, and strategies to create the life you want without selling out your morals or values. But before we begin, I want to remind you of the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you at thechangephysician.com. This is the Change Physician, episode 182. Thank you for joining the Change Physician. I am Melissa Cady with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Cuccaro. And today we're going to do something, I call it special.
They're all special, Melissa. They're all special.
All special. There's a book that Kevin and I have both read and have, it's had an impact. And it's something we'll talk about later, is how sometimes when you read a book, you may not always know like exactly what was said per se. I mean, there are some things that are step-by-step type books, but there's sometimes ideas that are brought into our minds that really influence how we see the world. And in particular, this one is maybe how we see money. So I'm going to reference Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. I always want to say Richard. I don't know why. But Robert Kiyosaki. And
it's called Bob Kiyosaki.
That's right. I mean, people might have their own opinion about him, but I as always, there's no perfection really in anybody, but I think there's a lot of value that he provides, especially when the way he talks about money, and being that a lot of people that are listening are physicians or physician allies, I think when I was reflecting back on this book, I told Kevin I wanted to read a little excerpt. It's like a page long, so bear with me. We usually don't read straight from a book in our conversations, but I think it'll be a stepping stone for us to have a conversation about some of the points that are made by Robert Kiyosaki. So are you okay if I read that,
Kevin? Go right ahead. Yeah.
So first of all, he says he had talked about a story about the richest men in America. And he said, the reason I started with the story of the richest men in America is to illustrate the flaw in the thinking of so many people. The flaw is that money will solve all problems. That is why I cringe whenever I hear people ask me how to get rich quicker or where do they start. I often hear, I'm in debt, so I need to make more money. But more money will often not solve the problem. In fact, it may actually accelerate the problem. Money often makes obvious our tragic human flaws. Money often puts a spotlight on what we do not know. That is why all too often a person who comes into a sudden windfall of cash, let's say an inheritance, a pay raise, or lottery winnings, soon returns to the same financial mess, if not worse than the mess they were in before they received the money. Money only accentuates the cash flow pattern running in your head. If your pattern is to spend everything you get, most likely an increase in cash will just result in an increase in spending. Thus the saying, a fool and his money is one big party. I have said many times that we go to school to gain scholastic skills and professional skills, both important. We learn to make money with our professional skills. In the 1960s, when I was in high school, if someone did well in school academically, almost immediately people assumed this bright student would go on to be a medical doctor. Often no one asked the child if they wanted to be a doctor. It was assumed. It was a profession with the promise of the greatest financial reward. Today, doctors are facing financial challenges I would not wish on my worst enemy. Insurance companies taking control of the business, managed healthcare, government intervention, and malpractice suits, to name a few. Today, kids want to be basketball stars, golfers like Tiger Woods, computer nerds, movie stars, rock stars, beauty queens, or traders on Wall Street, simply because that is where the fame, money, and prestige is. That is the reason it is so hard to motivate kids in school today. They know that professional success is no longer solely linked to academic success, as it once was. And it says this last part, because students leave school without financial skills, millions of educated people pursue their profession successfully, but later find themselves struggling financially. They work harder, but don't get ahead. What is missing from their education is not how to make money, but how to spend money, what to do after you make it. It's called financial aptitude. What you do with the money once you make it, how to keep people from taking it from you, how long you keep it, and how hard that money works for you. Most people cannot tell why they struggle financially because they do not understand cash flow. A person can be highly educated, professionally successful, and financially illiterate. These people often work harder than they need to because they learned how to work hard, but not how to have their money work for them. I thought that was like brilliant.
Well, and it's especially brilliant if you're coming into the scenario without any sort of knowledge, you know, and that's, and that's the key thing. This is like, if you've already read this book, or you're a master in finance, or you're already financially independent, you're not going to learn anything in this book. Mm-hmm. And that's not the point of it.
Yep.
This is a book really for people to simply like sort of ignite their thinking. And that's the key, awareness. Like what you did. Yeah. There's an awareness though, there, that there's something beyond income. That income is only one step of the equation, and it's one little lever that you need to be paying attention to. And you know, that's like the overall power of this book, is that it changes how you think about money. I no matter what else there is about it, it moves this idea that rich people aren't rich because they have a lot of money. They're rich because of how they apply money and where their money is coming from. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's a quite powerful book, and it reminds me of another one which I can't remember now, that was talking about, like, physicians are notorious for this, like most people don't have financial education in general. If you don't come from a family that modeled it or heard anything about it, then you didn't learn it. Then you're getting in a situation where you now have all this money. And, you know, you come out and now you have all these debts, but then you're making a lot of money, and they tend to spend it. And so there was this example in this one book. It was a cardiologist, and the cardiologist, this book was written, I think, in the like early 90s. So this cardiologist would make like $500,000 a year, which was a lot of money now, was a lot of money back then. Mm-hmm. And he talked to whoever this financial advisor, and he's like, I have all these debts and I'm pulling in whatever, however much, I can't remember what it was a month. You know, some ungodly amount after taxes. And he goes, but I don't have anything at the end of the year. And so the financial analyst has basically looked at his numbers and looked at, and he's like, well, this is what we're going to do, is we're going to take out $2,500 a month before you automatically out of your paycheck and put it somewhere. And we'll just, that's it. You know, cause he's like, there's too many, you know, the financial analyst is probably thinking there's, you know, you can't do too much change at once. And so like a year later, the cardiologist came back to him and was complaining about the same thing. I'm spending too much. My wife's spending too much. My credit cards are crazy. Da, 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 da. He goes, but now I got $50,000 in this bank account. What am I supposed to do with it? And it's just understanding that there is more to money. You know, that, you know, we talk about awareness on this podcast all the time, because if you are not aware, you can't change.
Right.
And if you come with this assumption that more money is going to make you more happy, that it's going to make you rich, without any sort of changing of that foundational belief system in how you apply and think and direct your attention, you're not going to change anything.
Yep. No, totally agree. I think that the, for anyone that's never read the book, I think they should read it.
Let's give a little summary of like the key takeaways that you got out of it. Like, what's the overall premise for the book?
But being that I didn't like fully read the book again, I feel like when I, like, even if you look at just like the graph, the visuals kind of give you kind of the general feel of how when you bring in money, essentially everything's just going right out. And instead of working it, letting it work for you and investing it and not always trading your time for money, like, you let the money work for you, other than just like straightforward in the bank, out the bank. Like, if you look at a lot of his flow charts, even the visuals will kind of help you understand a little bit. And they're oversimplified, for sure. But a lot of people just end up having liabilities, is kind of what I feel like. There's liabilities and there's no real assets.
So really, because that's what's really critical. And if you're listening to this audio and you can't see a visual, and we're not right. putting a visual anyway, so it doesn't matter, is he's really talking about cash flow patterns.
Right.
Right. So if you kind of pull out on page 60, he's talking about, like, you have income, you always have income, expenses, assets, and liabilities. And there's Melissa, if you're actually seeing us on YouTube, you can actually see the page.
Yeah.
There's their check boxes. So most people's cash flow comes income, and then you have your expenses. And then below that, that's sort of like the foundation of it, is assets, which actually amplify your income, and liabilities, which amplify your expenses. And this pattern of understanding how cash flow works. And then he also goes into, there's different forms of income or mindsets. There's the employee, there's the business owner, mm-hmm. there's the investor. And I'm kind of blanking on the fourth one here. Who's the fourth one?
But just like wealthy or?
The entrepreneur, right? Well, employee, or maybe it's employee saver. I have to look, sorry, folks. Totally blew that one. EBSI, and I just can't remember what the S is. Employee, self-employed, business owner, investor. Okay, that was it. Because the employee, you're working for somebody else, so your income is dependent on that person. Self-employed, you're working for yourself, but you are still trading your time for money. Business owner, now you're constructing a process or system in which to deliver a service or good. And then you are now not necessarily tied directly. And then there's the investor. And what the investor then has done is creating these passive income streams. And what I kind of liked about A is being able to, when he talks about cash flow, it first starts to make you identify, okay, what's my income? What is my expenses? That's like the first step in anything. It's like balancing a checkbook, which you think would be common knowledge, and some people seem to be able to do it. But then you have to, the next kind of big one for us, particularly as physicians, is this idea of assets versus liabilities. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? I'll never forget one of the most ridiculous statements I heard back in this was in high school. And I didn't have a lot of financial knowledge at that time. And at least I knew this was stupid. And I was hanging out with some people. And one of the guys was like, yeah, I'm going to buy this new car and I'm going to fix it up or whatever, you know, and it'll have a little bit of equity built up. And I'm like, there's no equity in cars. I mean, there's no equity in cars unless you have some sort of classic from, you know, whatever. And even those, I think, are poor investments overall. But, you know, people who think that buying a brand new car somehow because it's brand new and maybe you can sell it again with some cash value, significantly less than your purchase price almost always, that's not equity. That's all liability. And the other big one for me was housing, because we, you know, if you have not had any sort of financial awareness, people are, you know, buy your big house, that's an asset, blah blah blah. Unless it's producing income, cash it flow. Is not an asset.
Right.
It is a liability no matter what. So and that was, I mean, I'm sure someone's going, oh, Dr. Carr, that's so simple. I'm like, it is if you're already aware of it. If you're not, these are huge, big mind shifts.
Oh, that's what I feel that the book is, it's a shifter. It for those that haven't shifted yet, their eyes haven't been open, this is what I think the book does. And I was trying to look for the exact four quadrants image, and maybe it's in the other book.
I had to steal the other book.
Oh yeah. So
because you know I couldn't find it quickly in the first one. Yeah.
Can you pull up that picture of the, yeah. So it's interesting. Someone did a video. I don't remember who it was. It was fascinating. They were using comparisons. Like, they were using like our vice president as in one quadrant and then Trump for another quadrant and like how they all make money. And, it was actually pretty spot on when you think about like the way that they probably generate their,
And what I like about this, because a lot of physicians, even like in private practice, they think they're business owners. Uh-huh. Most of them aren't. Most of them are just S's.
Yeah.
Because they're still trading time for money. You may be, you know,
like me right now.
Right now. You have, you're, you know, and this would fits freelancers, anything that you are directly, like if you take your, if you stopped, the income stops. You are still either an employee or in the self-employed strategy.
Yeah.
And there's strong advantages definitely to being in the self-employed in a lot of situations. There's advantages in the employed. But you're still doing this thing of trading time for money. Yeah. And way back when we talked to Dr. Eric Tate, who's just like a master of this stuff, the path to wealth is when you can divest your independent efforts. Your time is now pulled away from the delivery of cash flow.
So let me tell you the three incomes, according to his little like summary thing at the end. In the world of accounting, there are three different types of income: earned income, passive income, portfolio income, And some of the comments that are made, of course, passive command, like real estate investments, which, you know, Eric, Dr. Tate does as well. The portfolio, obviously stocks, bonds, mutual funds, but Rich Dad used to say, the key to becoming wealthy is ability to convert earned income into passive income and or portfolio income as quickly as possible. The taxes are highest on earned income. The least taxed income is passive income. So you see some of these comments about different types of income and how you see it differently, but obviously earned income is trading time for money. A lot of physicians do that. If I want to leverage up my wealth without trying to exchange my time for money all the time, I could, you know, have a system where I put other people to do the work and I don't have to be there. So,
well, you're doing different work, you know, right. And that's the other thing about this is there's inherent unfairness in our tax system for sure. Mm-hmm. On the other term though, and people kind of want to say, well, I did this work and so I should, you know, I should get paid more because I'm the deliverer of the service. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you should be paid fairly for the delivery of the first service, but the business owner, there's a significant degree of risk that they are assuming that you are not. Now, it can get completely skewed. And I think we're fully skewed right now because particularly in the ultra wealthy scenarios, when you have, you know, banks that are failing and are too big to fail and get cash buyouts and there's some absurdity with all of this. But it's just recognizing what the worth and value is for certain things and that business owners are providing a service in business. Not everybody can. It is hard. It is hard to be a business owner.
Yeah. You are building relations. Like in the world of medicine, let's say, for example, for me, if I build out my business, I have to create relationships, trust, and build a system and have, you know, vetted it. And, you know, basically create something that is of great value to patients, but also to the surgeons that maybe I'm serving. So it's a different kind of work. It's not the labor at the bedside, but you, that person working for you may not have that opportunity without you creating the system in place, you know, that's in place.
Yeah. And I also think there's a time frame difference. So when we're looking at, if you can see this again, these cash flows, and we're still like working over here with the employed versus the self-employed. Mm-hmm. Having been both, like in my entrepreneurial stuff, I never really achieved a point where I had a system where I was employing people. And there's a number of different reasons for that. One of them, I didn't want the complexities. Like when you start getting up here and you have employees and stuff, that starts getting really weird. But your time is also different. So when you're self-employed, you tend to have more on-demand time flexibility. Like it was great when I was self-employed and consulting and doing my stuff and training and things. For that period of time, I literally had control. Like, so there was years that we were doing things. Like we had one summer, we were almost gone for 6 weeks and you could do that, right? Mm-hmm. Without any, because you're the boss.
Yeah.
But I will also say, you're the boss all the time.
Yes.
So the cognitive demand when you are not on is still there. And there's a low grade stress associated with that. Yes. That's very different. Like, so I took an employed physician, right. It just sort of stumbled in it. It happened in the middle of the pandemic, for a bunch of different reasons. One of the reasons is because of this whole cognitive load on my brain. And it is remarkably different. The thing I absolutely can't stand is that when I am employed, my time is not necessarily mine.
Right.
But the difference of when I'm off, mm-hmm, is, I mean, it's like two different worlds. It is really weird having been on that other, like in the self-employed side for like 8 to 9 years, almost a decade, to all of a sudden being like, oh, I don't have to worry. It's very different, but it's also enjoyable.
Yeah.
But knowing that, so if you're sitting in that ERS side, employed or self-employed, again, most physicians are going to find themselves there. The key why you're doing that is to develop those passive income assets. So you can either do that by developing a business, which is a lot of work, mm-hmm, and we are often time strapped, but the fastest path for most physicians is then to purchase or invest in income producing assets. And you see this with a lot of the physician blogs, you know, even like Leaf with Physician on Fire, is you either invested in stocks, you can invest in real estate, you can, which is probably the biggest ones you can do, either active in real estate or passive in real estate. But the whole point of this is, if you have all this income that you're getting taxed a crap load on, particularly if you're an employed physician, yeah, is to move that as quickly as possible into these passive quadrants. And then you can, it's absolutely nonsense that if you are a physician earning a physician's salary, you're gonna at some point, if you're directing the flow of your income appropriately and in putting it in assets versus liabilities, you will become financially independent. Now, granted, an anesthesiologist or a cardiologist or a radiologist can probably do it a little bit faster depending on their debt load as compared to a pediatrician or a family practice doc. But the income for the average physician in this day and age is still substantially greater than most people in America.
So it's just
that change in thinking. And these are it had a huge influence on me, like really. Yeah.
Well, and this is the Change Physician podcast. So, you know, I think this is an example of some wisdom and books that can change you. And it can be so subtle sometimes if you're not used to like evaluating it. Like, I can admit that sometimes I just read things and I don't realize how it's layering into my psyche and my thought patterns. And then you start realizing, why is it I seem so different than the physicians around me, and people don't get me, and I'm doing stuff that's like over here and online and writing a book, and like, how do you have time for, like, I don't know. Like, I think I've been inspired by a lot of people that have been non-medical entrepreneurs, or people, you know, like Robert Kiyosaki, sorry. but it really is, that's the power of books. And granted, you know, you want good information, but these things have influenced my life, and it's not just him. I mean, there's plenty of other books that I've read that I find it's compelling to make you rethink how you're doing things in your life. And all these quadrants you talked about, let's say ESIB, I pretty much will be just ESI. that sounds like a procedure in pain, but I went from E to S, and I think that a lot of people start dabbling in the other quadrants sometimes, especially when it comes to investing. And I've done some of that from a, you know, like retirement money thing standpoint, but I'm hoping to dabble a little bit more in, you know, current, instead of just all in retirement type things. But, which actually, it's true. Actually, I real estate wise, even with my own brother, I have a little rental. So, I mean, these things have just happened in the last few years. Granted, I've been, you know, out working in private practice, but I think it's taken a while for even me to, and I feel like I need to reread this book just to kind of re-ingrain some of the thought processes. Because sometimes it's easy to just run those old patterns.
Well, and 2 points there. One is, when you read and you learn, the mistake we think is that everybody's reading and learning with us, right? So we did a whole episode on the curse of knowledge, right? Yeah. And I think that's the danger is sometimes we're like, we will skip over things. And I see this, and physicians do this all the time with our patients, right? Where we just skip over and we're like, oh, this is like secondhand. Everybody knows this, and they don't. Mm-hmm. So if you are feeling like an alien around your peers, it's probably because you are a mental alien around your peers. And that's just simply because they haven't read. They don't understand that stuff. So they're coming from a completely different alignment, as Tim Treacy would say, or perspective. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other part is just really recognizing, when it comes to the quadrants, if you're an employee, I guess the fastest path and the easiest path is simply to trace an arrow from E to I, just like you're saying, is just to go straight down that path. And you can do that either with your retirement accounts, which everybody should be maxing out, period. In addition to that, you know, something on the side where you either have it in a post-tax account, or, you know, it just, it's I don't know, focusing early so that you get the power of compounding there,
yes,
no matter what your status is like truly the key, except for the few who are like, have that really strong entrepreneurial skill set, mm-hmm, and start and then jump into the B category. That is I still to this day though, and it's probably because my brain works differently and a lot of that, and a lot of the skill set I haven't developed, and it's not something that has come very easy to me. That's a hard, I mean, that can be very, very hard. And I think for physicians, that can be extraordinarily difficult because it's not really not in alignment with how we typically practice. Now, there's some fantastic physician entrepreneurs, business owners, but I do think that they're exception as compared to the rule. And most of us would be best to just filter the money down into that investment category.
Like Naveen.
Oh God, Naveen. Yeah, right. You know, well, yeah. So Naveen is an exception. Naveen Goyal, who we interviewed a little while back, and apparently out of nowhere, I don't know how, we asked him this and he's like, oh, I just did it. Yeah, that doesn't happen very much.
No.
You know, that doesn't typically do that. Or Eric Tate, who we've interviewed a bunch of times, just absolutely love Eric. And his mindset was influenced very early before he even started with medical school. Mm-hmm. And then he got his MBA, which had an entrepreneurial focus. And so he was very strategic at the get-go with making sure that he was part-time practice, less earned income, but he had all that time then to focus on developing those asset classes. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's done really, really well with that. So, but I think most of us, and obviously this is skewed by my perspective because it's certainly me, that's a really hard shift to make. Yeah. And so if you're trying to do it, sure, but just make sure you're just going E to I with your income, make it so that you're developing those assets.
Yep. Totally agree. And I just spaced out on something I was going to say, cause I was listening to you. It's all good. But you know, I wanted to, if it's okay with you, I wanted to, mention, there's a section in this, of course, what was the name of that second book?
Cashflow Quadrant.
This is like the earlier Rich. He's got so many books out, but
well, I have the same copy as you, apparently. This was after 2000.
Yeah, this one says it was printed in 1997 or something.
The first
like that.
Version.
Yeah.
Well, and then they had the second printing or whatever.
Yeah, it says 97-98.
Yeah.
But copyright, I mean. Well, at the end of this one, it talks about getting started, and I was just going to mention a couple of their, you know, their little, you know, guidance points. Or maybe I should just mention a couple. There's quite a few. Essentially, they talk about some of the things that, you know, to get started and what you should or shouldn't do. And just even like, it's like a 10 step, you know, guide. And maybe it's just best for you to dive into this book, because I think you need kind of like the initial information.
I think we should do an episode and just go through the steps as a second follow up, because there's a couple of them. I'm just looking at them now because it's been a while since I picked it up. There's a lot we can go into on this. So let's do a part two, because I think we've been talking for a while, and we'll just go through the steps.
Okay. Well, why don't you take us out on this one, and then we'll restart with the dive.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Change Physician Podcast, where we were talking about Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And stay tuned for episode two, where we're going to talk about those steps mentioned in getting started, which is really about chapter 9. It should be interesting because, as I said, there's a couple that I would challenge some of the things that he says.
All right. See you all later. If you don't know what the Change Physician is all about, go to thechangephysician.com and we'll see you on part
two. Thank you for joining us today on the Change Physician Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please let us know by going to thechangephysician.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you simply by joining the community at thechangephysician.com.